Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan, and you're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com or CommunityProgressiveRadio.org or on iTunes. I just want to wish you a wonderful new year, 2013. 13 is my lucky number, so hopefully it's an unlucky number for the war machine. We've been on hiatus for a little while I finished my new book. I left my marbles in San Francisco, The Scandal of Federal Electoral Politics. And we're back with a blockbuster show. Oh, by the way, my book is finished, the first draft. We're working hard on getting it out to everybody as soon as possible. I have, like I said, a blockbuster show. Later on, we'll be talking to Phil Restino, a member of Veterans for Peace and an impeachment activist. Before Phil comes on, we'll be talking to author and comedian and actor Richard Belzer. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back with Richard Belzer. Our first guest is Richard Belzer. Richard is an actor, author, and comedian, and he's probably best known for portraying John Munch on the police drama series Homicide, Life on the Street, and Law and Order Special Victims Unit. And he's also an intellectual, a very smart guy, very articulate, very, very nice. I couldn't have spoken to a nicer person when I interviewed him. And the reason I'm talking to him this week is because he's the author of Dead Wrong, Straight Facts on the Country's Most Controversial Cover-Ups.
Richard Belzer, thank you for joining Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. It's a pleasure to have you.
Well, I'm glad you have a soapbox. You should have
Well, one. And I like to give other people the soapbox, too, because, as you know...
Yeah, you sure? That's good.
Yeah, voices from alternative to the establishment.
Right.
We don't have very many venues to to have a soapbox.
I know, but we're getting more and more responses from average people about what we've been talking about for years.
Right, and thank goodness for independent media, so we do have this chance.
It's extraordinary.
Okay, so I called you because I wanted to talk about your newest book, I think, Dead Wrong, Straight Facts on the Country's Most Controversial Cover-Ups. You co-wrote it, and somebody who's also been on my show, Governor Jesse Ventura, wrote the afterword, I believe, to your book. And first of all, let's talk about that phrase, conspiracy theorists. What are your thoughts on that phrase?
Well, the word conspiracy means that, as you know, when two people get together and they discuss committing a crime, that's a conspiracy. By that definition, millions of conspiracies occur every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from the American Revolution to Iran-Contra to Watergate to the Tuskegee experiments on black servicemen to all kinds of stuff, testing weapons in America, and, you know, by the 50s we tested, our government tested on our own people different toxins in the New York subway, in the San Francisco harbor. So the word conspiracy has been marginalized and diluted by the mainstream media and clearly the government, because if people start seriously thinking about it, you realize that everything virtually is a conspiracy. You know, my philosophy is, prove to me something's not a conspiracy. I go the other way. People say, well, it's not a conspiracy. You have to prove to me it is. I say, prove to me it isn't. And that's how I work. And, you know, I, for years I've been interested in these issues. And for years I've been, I'm not crying. I'm just saying I've been marginalized and stuff. But then when I started writing books with footnotes and working with historians, it's gotten much more serious. And actually, my last book, the one you have, made the New York Times bestseller list. So, you know, the public is catching on, you know, slowly but surely.
Well, when you were researching the book, did you find anything that shocked or surprised you?
Yes. Actually, my partner, David Wayne, who is an incredible, you should have him on your show also. He's an amazing historian and researcher. He found some stuff out about Lyndon Johnson that I thought I knew a lot about Johnson's history, but he discovered some really amazing evidence of Johnson having people assassinated. I knew he was complicit in eliminating two people, but it seems like there must have been five or six people that at the direct behest of Lyndon Johnson, people were murdered. Also, we found in our book, irrefutably, once and for all, proved that Marilyn Monroe was in fact murdered and not, that was not a suicide. We got some really great research on that. And in the first chapter of the book, Frank Olson, who was a member of the CIA, he was murdered by the very techniques that he had been working on and was appalled by. Mm-hmm. And his family sued the government in the 70s, and now they're suing them again. Recently, I read in the New York Times, the Olson family is again suing the federal government over the murder of Frank Olson. So it's new. You know, the book is a history book, but now it's topical.
There have been some recent things that have been very strange. I was thoroughly raked over the coals when I questioned the recent death of Osama bin Laden in 2011. Have you researched? And it's not like I'm saying who murdered him or that it didn't happen the way they said it happened, but there's been absolutely not one shred of empirical proof that it happened the way they said that it happened.
Yeah, the thing about bin Laden is because he was so despised, I think a lot of researchers don't really care how he died.
Uh-huh.
And to me, I think it's a joke to think that this, you know, 6'4" guy on a dialysis machine in a cave didn't bat. You know, 9/11 clearly was much more professional. It may have had governments involved in it.
Right.
And I think he, like Saddam Hussein, was a useful boogeyman who was nowhere near the threat we said he did. He was more symbolic than anything else. And who knows? He was living right next to a major army base in a giant compound. So for them to say they didn't know where he was I'm talking about the Pakistanis, was ridiculous. And I'm certain that probably, I'm guessing now, I think the Bush administration really didn't care about getting him or not because he was useful. But I do believe that President Obama really did want to get him, both symbolically and militarily. And I don't know how they did, but I'm certain that he's no longer in existence. He may have died years ago. He may still be alive in a hole somewhere. But he's of no threat to us if he ever was.
Right.
In fact, if I may, Cindy, there's great not evidence. I mean, there's clear evidence that Al-Qaeda was invented by us. The United States government gave these terrorists and a small band of terrorists who were refuted by most of the Muslim world, gave them the name Al-Qaeda so they could indict bin Laden the way you could someone in the you know what the RICO Act is in America?
Yeah.
It's about conspiracy. It's about gangsters and colluding to do illegal things. They didn't have anything on bin Laden, so they invented Al-Qaeda, pretending it was like a Casa Nostra or it was a mafia or it was, you know, a terrorist group. Bin Laden himself did not use the term Al-Qaeda until after 9/11. We invented this. It's not an international cell of sleepers all over. If they were, they already would have done their damage. It's a big, well, you know, it's just trying to control us. I'm more worried about... Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, you go ahead.
I'm more worried about white Republican congressmen. They're the real terrorists. They're the ones cutting off. I'm serious. They're cut off.
No, I know what you mean.
They cut off education. They are misogynistic. They are homophobic. They never met a war they didn't like or understand. I mean, they're the terrorists. in my view.
Well, of course, our own government, like Martin Luther King Jr. said, the biggest purveyor of violence in the world today is my own government. So I have...
Yeah.
Exactly. Did you write it? You wrote about him in the book too, right?
Yeah, Dr. King and Fred Hampton. Fred Hampton was one of the unsung heroes of the civil rights movement. He was a Black Panther, but he was nonviolent. He had breakfast programs, and he was helping with the schools and legislation, and he was massacred. Anyway, I'm glad that that the book did as well, because he's one of the few people that more people should know about. Fred Hampton.
For sure. When did it become like almost treasonous to question the government?
That's a great question.
Yes.
Well, I don't know if it's ironic, but in the 1980s, I was highly critical of the Reagan administration and was censored, lost jobs, was cut off at on a panel, I was kind of ostracized. At the beginning of Reagan's presidency, no one was really busting him on anything. And I started talking about Reaganomics, which was, some of it's a little scatological, but I was saying, Reaganomics, food stamps, that tree bark was a vegetable, ketchup is a vegetable, eat tree bark.
Right.
Next time, instead of getting pregnant, have oral sex. I'm cleaning up my act. But essentially what I was saying was that Reaganomics was just a total insult to the poor. Reagan made it okay to be prejudiced again and to demonize the poor. To me, he is the second worst president. George Bush is the worst president, and I believe Ronald Reagan is the second worst president. I know I could get in debates about that, but I'll stick to my guns. Reagan did a lot of damage to this country. He disassembled every department. He put in all these right-wing ideologues who didn't like government, so when they became the head of education or the head of transportation, they would disassemble the government, essentially. And quietly and stealthily, Reagan kind of, made it okay to demonize the poor. He gave those, tax breaks to the rich. He spent $4 trillion on borrowed money against an empire in decline, the Soviet Union. And also the mining of the harbor in Haiphong and the war in Nicaragua, guns for hostages. I mean, Reagan was really, obviously he was controlled by the people around him, but he was a mouthpiece for some real dark forces who were in power and then were out of power and then came back. Cheney and Rumsfeld worked for Ford, worked for Reagan. They came back with their, Iraq plan. They wanted to go into Iraq even before 9/11.
Right.
So this, what really woke me up, Cindy, was when the Watergate break-in happened, I started studying that a little bit, and I saw some of the same names that were involved in the Bay of Pigs. And then when Iran-Contra happened, some of the same names involved in the Bay of Pigs and Watergate came up again. And I realized, oh, Jesus, this is, how naive am I? There, as General Eisenhower said, this beware the national security state. But also in that speech, he said, militarily and spiritually, people don't use that term that Eisenhower used. He said we were in danger spiritually from the military-industrial complex, and damn if he wasn't right. If Eisenhower was afraid, then, a five-star general, he was afraid of the right wing. He was too moderate. He could never be elected today, General Eisenhower.
Right.
Anyway, I'm going on. I'm sorry.
Well, I just have, I'm so grateful for your time and your flexibility, and I know you're very busy, but I am a huge fan of Stephen King. I have been since I was about 18 years old. And I recently read a book he wrote called 11-22-63 about the assassination of Kennedy. The one thing, it was a pretty good fictional account, but he said that in the afterword, he said that the only conclusion that a thinking person could come to about this was that Oswald acted alone. What's your thoughts on that?
I'll tell you, I think Stephen is an absolute genius and a fiction writer. And he seems like a pretty decent guy from his essays and stuff. What I've come across in my many, and I'm telling you, many decades of studying the case, going to Dallas, being in the museum, being in the plaza, talking to all kinds of people, listening to lectures and finding obscure pamphlets and reading French books, and I've really gotten into this. And for anyone in 2013, and it's astounding, especially Stephen, to come to the conclusion that Lee Harvey Oswald shot John Kennedy is almost beyond comprehension. First of all, Lee Harvey Oswald was having lunch on the first floor of the book depository. He was seen at 122, 123, and if you want to quibble, by three different people. Now, the reason this is important is because the very few notes that were taken, Oswald was interviewed, but they destroyed many of the notes. But some of the notes still exist, where Chief Curry and others were talking to him. And the little that we have of what Oswald said was, one of the things he said was, they asked him where he was. He said, I was in the lunchroom, and I saw Junior and that other guy. So he named two black employees from the book depository of the many dozens of people that work there. He couldn't have guessed that.
Uh-huh.
So he did, because they said they saw him. Plus, there was a woman, I'm drawing a blank on her name, her last name is Arnold. She was pregnant. She had to go to the ladies' room like every 20 minutes or so. She walked through the lunchroom around 1224, and saw Lee Harvey Oswald. Okay, so that means if he was on the first floor at 1224, he would have had gone up five flights, which is really 10 because I was there. They have landings, so a flight is really two small flights. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So for him to go from the first floor to the sixth floor and go across the floor of the depository and get into the so-called sniper's nest and fire off the three shots and then go back across and wipe the rifle and place it in behind the boxes, then go back down to the second floor and get a Coke and be calmly drinking it when first seen at 1:30 by Officer Marion and Roy Truly, the manager of the building. So the reason I'm saying all this is because it was physically impossible for Oswald to have fired the shots. So we could debate who ordered it, who did it, but he wasn't involved. He didn't even fire a shot. There's a good theory, which I'm beginning to subscribe to with all the evidence that keeps coming in, believe it or not, that he definitely worked for our government. He was a fake defector. He went to Russia under a program. But he was working for us, and he may have thought he infiltrated the cabal that was going to kill Kennedy, but they used him as a patsy. I think he... because there's good evidence that he liked Kennedy and that the last thing on his mind was killing Kennedy. I mean, he was a fake communist and, all that stuff. So, it's just disturbing to see someone like Stephen say that without really looking at the evidence that's in the public domain. I wrote a book in 1999 and I was called Crazy and Everything and about Kennedy. And much of what I said... has been corroborated time and again, and new information came out in 99, 100,000 pages were released, and we learned that there were two brains and that his body was doctored and the x-rays were doctored. And, I don't know how much proof people need. My belief is this, Sandy, that there are certain realities like the World Trade Center, like the Kennedy murder and the Bobby's murder and Malcolm's murder, and Dr. King, and where people cannot, for some part of their brain, it's nothing to do with IQ, I've found, they cannot accept the notion that their government would do certain things, and then their brain stops. I have sat with the most really highly intelligent people, really intelligent and explain to them in detail certain facts that I know to be true, and they can't hear, they don't want to hear it. They laugh, they walk away, or they, you know, I mean, they don't ridicule me, but they just can't accept it. And so I think it's a, there's a psychological, I know Tom Hanks right now is making a movie about the JFK assassination, and I know it's going to be, you know, Lee Oswald did it, and it's just, you know what, it's almost criminal, you know, to lie about it, because what are we going to, you know, say it's on the front page of the New York Times, you know, our government was complicit in the murder of John Kennedy. Most people are going to go, yeah, what's new? We knew that. You know, I mean, people aren't stupid. It's not the 50s where we were all patronizing the citizenry and creating a Red Scare and, you know, there's 5 million channels. Americans have seen everything. If an alien landed, they'd probably get a talk show in a week and be folded into our society. So this thing of protecting us from stuff is just the government's way of controlling us.
Well, we're indoctrinated almost from the time we're born. So,
literally.
Into this myth. Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
Do you have a pen? Do you have a pen?
I do.
Write this down. Century of the Self. It's a documentary that you can watch, and it's about the invention of public relations. It's absolutely fascinating how public relations was invented and then employed to lie us into wars and to get us to buy products we don't need. And it's in English, obviously English, because the Americans can never do it. It's on YouTube, Cindy. If you go on YouTube, you put in Century of the Self full movie, then you could watch it without it being broken up into, you know, 8-minute chunks. You could watch it. I highly recommend it.
Okay,
I've been
great.
Studying it. It's called Century of the Self.
I will link that also on the newsletter I send out talking about the show and, of course, also your book. So, Richard Belzer, thank you.
Huh? Can I start getting your newsletter you said?
Yes, yes.
Can I start getting it?
Yes, I will sign you up for it. I think I have your email. I'll put you on my database. And Richard Belzer, a co-author of Dead Wrong, Straight Facts and the Country's Most Controversial Cover-Ups, among other things. I know you're a very busy person, and we here at the Soapbox are very happy that you gave us some time to talk about these things.
Anytime, Cindy. I have another book coming out in the spring, and I hope to talk to you again.
Oh, perfect. We'll get you back on. Richard Belzer, thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. It was great to talk to you.
Take care, Cindy, and thank you.
Okay, you'll be hearing from us.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
That was actor, comedian, and author Richard Belzer. And this is Cindy Sheehan. You're listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox, in case you forgot. Our next guest is Phil Restino. Phil is an impeachment activist, and he is a founding member and chapter co-chair for the Central Florida chapter of Veterans for Peace. He's a peacetime veteran, having served a 2-year enlistment as an infantryman in the U.S. military. He is also the Northeast Florida coordinator for the Florida chapter of Military Families Speak Out, having been a member since September of 2005. Phil co-hosts his own monthly radio program with our friend Larry Pinckney of the Black Commentator, our soapbox friend Larry Pinckney, and he'll be on the soapbox soon. The name of the one-hour program is We Cannot Be Silent, as per Martin Luther King's Beyond Vietnam, A Time to Break the Silence speech. And archives of the show can be accessed on their YouTube channel of the same name, which is We Cannot Be Silent. So, our next guest is Phil Restino.
Phil Restino, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thank you, Cindy. Thanks for asking me to come on the show to talk about Walter Jones' resolution, which... he's the congressman out of North Carolina that put out H-Con Res 107 last March, and
right.
And what that was, yeah.
Yeah, let me just interrupt you very quickly. I want you to tell my listeners, of course, about that resolution and what you've been working on, but I also am interested in the response you've gotten from the movements who were so hot for impeaching George Bush. So tell us about the resolution, then tell my listeners about the response you've been receiving.
Sure. The resolution came out in March of 2012 during the election cycle, and it was introduced by a Republican, and I do believe that has something to do with what I have called for years the left-only need-apply anti-war movement. And what the resolution was and is, because it was just reintroduced into the 113th session last week by Congressman Walter Jones, it calls mm-hmm. for the impeachment of the president should that president of the United States once again send our troops to attack another country without first going to Congress and getting the proper approval. And what it is a threat. It's a threat, and a threat of impeachment is sufficient, and it has been done in the past, and it has worked in the past. So all throughout 2012, when the drum beats for war on Iran, the same cast of characters on the corporate stream TV news, as your friend Larry Pinckney likes to call it, corporate stream news. The drum beats for Iran and Syria, many have said, is the way to Iran, the gateway to Iran. And
right.
You know, and as you know, there's been a lot of stirring up there and calls for going in there to settle things. And you know, there's AFRICOM, another friend of your show, a friend of yours, Cynthia McKinney's been sounding the alarm about AFRICOM since it was established in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
So they're looking at Mali now in Northwest Africa. And the president has already demonstrated that he will order an attack on another country without even bothering to lie to Congress, without even going to Congress. At least Bush went to Congress and lied, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Obama set a precedent, and I say it's a precedent because the Congress and the anti-war movement allowed him to get away with it in March of 2011.
And you're talking about Libya, correct?
Yes, with Libya.
You're talking about Libya, correct?
Mm-hmm. Right, and that's and Obama, he wasn't even in the country. He phoned it in. He was down in Brazil or somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Phoned it in on a Saturday, and actually, the 8 years to the day of Bush's own shock and awe
right.
in Iraq. And
I remember some of us were in front of the White House protesting. Some of
that's
us
right.
were protesting around the country, the anniversary of the invasion of Iraq. And
as
then Obama
we.
Starts another war.
On the day. And that's
right,
the day that...
Right, exactly.
Yes. And I didn't know until we got back from our demo in Daytona Beach.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, we've been out there every Thursday night, every single Thursday night since December of 2005. Our Vets for Peace chapter in Central Florida, the women from Cold Pink East Central Florida.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, back to this resolution, which is now called H-Con Res 3, put forth by Walter Jones of North Carolina. They did a press conference, which I want to encourage everybody to see, and this ties into your question, is how has Vets for Peace and the anti-war people responded. They did a press conference on December 19th, 2012, where Walter Jones, a Republican from North Carolina, was joined by a Democrat, not just a Democrat, a black Democrat, Charlie Rangel from New York.
Uh-huh.
And they stood shoulder to shoulder and said, look, you know, we cannot allow the president of the United States to send our kids attacking other countries without first going to Congress. We can't allow for it. And he was there with other retired military people and such. Now, the press conference, this was 9 months after the resolution was introduced, but it was safe because the elections, Democrats, Republicans, was held the month before, so that
right.
was out of the way. It was facilitated by the people from the LaRouche pack. And I don't care who's putting it up, you know. If they can get a member of Congress to introduce legislation that threatens impeachment to prevent a war, I want to hear about it. I don't care what jersey they're wearing. And
well, can I interrupt you very quickly about this, too? Did Walter Jones get any co-sponsors?
Not yet, but what I did today, and he was on national radio yesterday morning on the Power Hour with Joyce Riley. You've been
and
a guest.
I actually invited him on my show when he introduced it last year, and he declined for whatever reason.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's a member of Congress, and I hope that wouldn't discourage you from inviting him back again, especially if one of your causes is stopping these wars, you know.
Well, I invited him, and it's really will really be up to him if he would want to be on my show. And
I reached across,
I'm not a Democrat or a Republican, but, you know, I reached out to him, and when he introduced it, invited him, and he turned me down, even though he has previously welcomed me in his office, but I guess I'm too controversial of a figure to be on his for him to be on my show or something.
No, it helps to actually ask and get an answer from the horse's mouth.
Yeah, exactly. He's the one that turned me down.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I'm looking at right now, and I'm looking at, they're in the transition period in Congress. The president has already demonstrated that he'll attack a country. You know, he signed the NDAA 2012 on New Year's Eve, which was a Saturday night. He bombed Libya on the 19th, which was a Saturday, 19th of 2011. Well, everybody's got their mind on Bush and marking that anniversary. You know, and so here we are. It's a dangerous time, and I believe that's why he wanted to get on air yesterday morning. And thank God he was able to, and he made the plea for co-sponsors. So I first called my congressman today that you do that first. And then I looked up the 12 co-sponsors who co-sponsored it last term and called every one of them their district offices and asked them to give Walter Jones a call because this could happen any moment. And now's a good time when Congress hasn't even gotten back to Washington. They haven't even, you know, finished tying their shoelaces yet, you know. It's a good time to do it. That seems to be the pattern. The anti-war Veterans for Peace, I posted on their listservs with the chapter contacts, and somebody else posted the press conference, which I want to encourage everybody to see this bipartisan stand with Congressman Walter Jones and Charlie Rangel. And if you just go to LaRouchePack.com and look for that press conference there, you'll see it from December 19th. It's about a 30-minute video. But here's the response from Veterans for Peace. The one response came back, LaRouche, he's a fascist. I don't want to be associated with nothing to do, Cindy, with the actual piece of legislation and what it says. Nothing to do with a possibility of stopping war. I joined Veterans for Peace the day that you testified in the basement hearings, and I saw Mike Ferner outside give that speech about our responsibility as citizens and our duty as veterans to nothing less than call for impeachment for these crimes. Right? That's what got me to join Vets for Peace. And once a Democrat got elected in 2009, all of a sudden, that doesn't apply. And am I angry about it? Yes. People tell me to calm down. No. We've got how many people have died in the last 4 years? Because I believe the anti-war movement, by not holding the Democrat to the same public standard being a public call by we the people. This has nothing to do with what the sellouts in D.C. do or won't do. This has got to start with us and us walking our walk. And so here it is. It's HCON Res 3. It's sponsored by Congressman Walter Jones in North Carolina. Impeachment. The threat of impeachment has worked in the past. It got the president in 28 February 1991 to call a ceasefire. And that was because Congressman Henry Gonzalez of Texas had a bill of impeachment that was prepared or helped prepared by international law professor Francis Boyle at the time in 1991, and it was waiting there, and George H.W. Bush wrote in his own memoir in 1998 that what kept him from further going into Iraq was the threat of impeachment, because it would have been seen as a war of aggression. So it has worked in the past. You won't hear this much, but the President of the United States can at any moment in time order a ceasefire. You know, they're talking about timetables of withdrawal, 2014, 2006, BS. That president right this very minute, if given enough heat from the people, and as long as we keep the heat partisan, whereas the left does not apply the same standard to the Democrat, then the people's remedy of impeachment is neutered. And so I blame the left and the anti-war movement for not applying the same standard and thus keeping the people's remedy powerless. If they apply the same standard, public call for impeachment, and all it takes is a little bit of breath of fresh air and vibrating your vocal cords, that's about as much effort and resources as this takes. When you're up in front of a microphone or on a radio show and you're the president of Veterans for Peace or you're Medea Benjamin of Code Pink, all the people that were in front of microphones pre-January 2009, for years, calling for impeachment, citing the crimes, citing the Constitution, our duty to uphold it. That's what we got to do. And it has worked in the past. And one other thing, Cindy, why didn't we do that before Iraq 2003, the war that your son was killed in? There was an effort to introduce a bill of impeachment. And this is per Francis Boyle, who was in the room drafting the bill of impeachment with former Attorney General Ramsey Clark. John Conyers, as ranking member of the House Judiciary Committee in March of 2003, gathered members of Congress and others to work on creating a bill of impeachment, as Henry Gonzalez did in 1991 to stop Papa Bush, which was successful. And they were there for 2 hours putting the bill together. And then the meeting was interrupted by John Podesta, not even an elected official. He was representing the Democratic National Committee, and he came in and told Conyers to stop it. They aborted it. They wanted to give Bush the war on Iraq for the reason that it would make Bush look bad and the Democrats would have a better chance in the 2004 election. So over 4,400 U.S. troops, your son included, 1.5 million innocent Iraqis, God knows how many millions more of their lives destroyed, all these veterans coming back blowing their brains out, depleted uranium, PTSD, trillions of dollars of monetary debt, let alone moral bankruptcy, because the Democrats gave Bush the war so they could look better and fare better in the 2004 elections. And you could go right to Ramsey Clark. Yes.
So let me, but I'm going to interrupt you for a second and ask another question. So I was one of the people who was working really hard from 2005 on impeachment for George Bush. Now you want to say that you think it's the fault of the anti-war movement or whatever, but we were working very, very hard, super hard. I don't know. I was in Vermont one weekend in the freezing cold in a bus going to, I think we went to like 20 different town halls, and they passed an impeachment resolution. John Conyers wrote a book called something like Impeaching the President. I forget what his book
after,
was called.
After 2 years of work from his committee.
Yeah.
It was an actual
book
making the case for impeachment.
Right. So he wrote that book when he was a ranking member of the House Judiciary Committee. But when the Democrats came into office in 2007, being elected in 2006, we were working just as hard, but the energy for impeachment or any kind of impeachment from the Congress was shut down as of 2007. So,
I was there with you, Cindy, maybe not physically, yeah, but you know us. We've right. been working on it since 2005.
But what I'm saying is it really the people's remedy? Our Congress and our government is ruled by the military-industrial complex, by the banks, by, you know, the one percenters and the corporations. If we couldn't get Bush impeached, and I'm for impeaching Obama, I think I want to make a bumper sticker that says impeach blank and just fill in the name of the current president. So if we couldn't get it done to Bush, then how are our chances of having a people's remedy? Okay.
I can answer that. I wrote a piece in June of 2011 called Impeach Now or Forever Hold Up Peace. And that was prior, and I made the case where impeachment, the people's remedy of impeachment has been neutered because of our own partisanship. It's been kept, we have taken the power away from ourselves.
When have the people ever impeached the president, though?
It's not about, I told you how the threat of impeachment actually stopped the first Gulf War. The guy admitted it in his own memoirs.
Right, and that's, you know, that was something that a congressman introduced, though.
The thing is, in order for Congress to go out on a limb, they've got to have cover. And I think that what we have, we've got it mixed up. It's on the people. It's on the people. Enough of the people to make the call to provide cover for the congressman to go out there and risk the flack that he's going to get. You know, I mean, look at Walter Jones and John.
How much cover mm-hmm. did John Conyers need, though? Conyers to go forward.
Well, look what he did. We worked our asses off to get Conyers and the Democrats elected in 06 because they had said, you know, get us in and we'll impeach Bush, we'll stop the wars. And
right.
they get in and Pelosi says impeachment's off the table and Conyers obeyed her, even though he was
said. And there was a huge movement to impeach Bush.
Right, but it wasn't a bipartisan
movement. Conyers refused to do it.
It was a Democratic anti-war movement. You know,
yeah.
with a Republican president.
Yeah.
You don't. Well, then why is there so much resistance since 2009 to publicly call for impeachment? Why does nobody
I don't
even?
Know. Yeah.
Because
I
they're
agree
afraid.
With you,
they're afraid. They're afraid that this partisan divide will crack because it's a political football, Cindy. You can always pass it off. Well, that's the Democrat. He's a Republican president, and the lefties are going after him. He's a Democratic president, and the righties are going. As long as the people stay divided. And I really believe, I want to go back to Mike Ferner's words, the speech that June 16, 2005, that got me to join Veterans for Peace. It is our responsibility. Veterans for Peace members stated our sworn duty to uphold the Constitution and impeach this criminal president. As citizens, every one of us is complicit in his crimes. By virtue of that complicity, we are compelled not only by the law, but by morality and history to do whatever we can to stop this war of aggression and these crimes against humanity. The Nuremberg tribunals following World War II did not favorably judge the first nation the world determined had waged a war of aggression, nor its good citizens who obeyed their government. And I'll tell you what, after we haven't applied the same standard of a public call. We got to start with ourselves, Cindy. We've got to start with ourselves. And I know our chapter of Vets for Peace in 2009, it was not even 4 years old then. We lost a heck of a lot of members. Tom Santoni, third day in office for Obama in January 2009, he went and bombed Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Santoni wrote a piece on February 2nd, Impeach Obama. I brought it to David Swanson of afterdowningstreet.org. you know, he ran it on that site. I approached, called on the phone, talked with Deborah Sweet of World Can't Wait, our own Vets for Peace, all these people that have been making the case for impeachment for these crimes. And we said, you know, we have a bumper sticker. We proposed it for these groups. War crimes are war crimes. Prosecute Bush, impeach Obama. And that
okay,
just
well,
goes
so
to...
We're actually running out of time now, so
yes.
Do you have a someplace that people can get more information about this?
Yes, I do. I want folks to go to the internet and look up h.con.res3, and it's Congressman Walter Jones out of North Carolina. Call the your congressperson at 202-224-3121 and tell them to co-sponsor this bill, and then start talking about it. Talking about it with your, if you're involved in a group, an activist group, talk about it. This is, Code Pink, when they first started, they had a book called Stop the Next War. Well, here it is.
I know. One of my
Where's Code Pink? They're selling tickets for
there.
A cruise.
Well,
let's,
I agree
let's
with
get
you.
On it. First,
I have been very...
First,
I'm with you, Phil. I've been very
disappointed. So I put out a challenge to Code Pink, Medea Benjamin, you know, to live up to what they were selling, and we have an opportunity to stop a war here. So let's get on it. HConRes3.
Thanks
stop
for your passion,
war.
Phil, and it was nice to talk to you. And
thank you, Cindy.
You know, well, good luck with everything.
Good, and I'll email you more information, and we want to thank you in the past for putting principle before political loyalties, and it was thanks to you. We didn't get our impeachment resolution passed in 210 or 209, but we got it passed in 211, and there's been a total suppression of the word getting out from the left only need apply anti-war movement. Veterans for Peace passed a resolution calling for Congress to impeach Obama for war crimes, and nobody knows about it.
Okay, Phil. Well, hopefully they
Thank
know
you.
About it now. And we'll
you,
we'll
Cindy.
Get the word out. Okay,
thanks
Phil.
Thanks a lot,
Christina.
Cindy. God bless you.
Okay, thanks for being on Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was Cindy Sheehan Soapbox for today. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed putting it together for you. And as always, I'd like to thank Don DeBar, my engineer and Community Progressive Radio. I'd like to thank my producer, Mikey. And I'd like to thank you all for listening and my guests, Richard Belzer and Phil Restino. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Peace out for now.